Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. With me today is my partner, Ryan Barnett. For those that you tune into the podcast regularly, or even those of you that don't, Revenue Rocket is the world's premier growth strategy and M&A advisor to tech-enabled services companies. Ryan, what the heck are we talking about today?
Oh, hey, Mike, and thanks for having us, and thanks to everyone who's been listening to our series. Oftentimes, we like to dig into things that we're seeing currently in deals and things that are might be a little bit of a niche, but help people understand some of the complexity in demystifying the things that we see in M&A transactions for IT services companies. And one of the things we're seeing in a deal today has a little bit of a customer, a buyer looking at the implications of an asset or a stock deal. And part of that, of the implications of goodwill within M&A transactions. You know, something I'm not familiar with, but Mike is much more familiar with, and wanted to dig in and understand what is goodwill and why it's important and what it should be considered. And then some thoughts and opinions about how it can be used for buyers and sellers in the marketplace. As a friendly reminder, you know, we are not tax consultants. While we have a number of tax considerations that are always done in M&A transactions, we defer official opinions over to your tax accountants and tax accounting teams who can give more detail. But we are, again, we deal with this in an everyday sense. So, Mike, just help me kick us off here. You know, what is goodwill and what's goodwill in terms of an IT services company?
Yeah, so, you know, goodwill, a couple things to think about. You know, goodwill on your balance sheet is essentially a filler, is one way to think about it, to the true valuation of the business. And in low asset businesses, you know, tech services companies where we don't have a lot of manufacturing or plant or equipment type things that you might have in other types of, you know, more physical asset businesses, the goodwill allocation really has to do with your, what we'll call your soft intellectual property or your operating experience is probably another way to put it. It has to do with the knowledge in the business. It's the cornerstone of a knowledge-based business. And in some ways, you could think of it as a plug to sort of the value of the business associated with that knowledge and that goodwill, if you will. So when we think about tech-enabled services businesses and you're going to do a transaction, if you will, you have to allocate the purchase price to something, right? And so if someone's going to, you know, you would never just sell your business as a tech-enabled services business for the value of the assets. Most people wouldn't do that regardless of the kind of business it is, but let's just assume, and, you know, in this case, you don't really have any physical assets. You have a few desks and maybe some computers and, you know, a few things, and you certainly wouldn't sell it just for the value of your physical assets or not the value of whatever those are. So then the delta between that and your purchase price has to be allocated somewhere, and it's typically allocated to goodwill. Now, there's good news with that. Goodwill's there's good news and bad news, I guess. Goodwill tends to be where the lion's share of the value is in a business. And it is a kind of a long-term asset from an amortization perspective. And what I mean by that is it's not susceptible to accelerated depreciation like some physical asset classes could be. Also, you know, I'll get into here a bit, you know, sort of the difference between an asset transaction from a legal perspective and a stock transaction, because there are impacts to a buyer or a seller. Although in the context of a tech-enabled services businesses, those are fairly minimal. And the reason why those differences are minimal is because of the lion's share of the purchase price is allocated to goodwill in both cases. And in some businesses, that's not the case. So I know it's kind of a complex topic, but we'll unpack it a little further here in a minute.
That's a great start, Mike. So if I to repeat here, that goodwill could be things like a customer list or a customer relationship. It could be the knowledge of a technology or service offering. It could be the brand or the logo. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely right. It's sort of everything that surrounds a business that allows that business to operate and make money. That isn't physical or might be a tangible asset.
Okay. And is goodwill, is this just simply an accounting thing, Mike? Is this to fill that hole in the balance sheet, or is there a reason why a company would want goodwill other than what you explained of revolving customer relationships or good customer relationships or good employees? Is there anything when you're buying a company that you look at that goodwill as a anything different than this accounting terminology?
Well, I mean, you're going to want to depreciate all of the assets that you acquire in a business. So the good news is that, you know, if you're going to pay, let's just be with nice round numbers, you're going to pay $10 million for a business. You know, you're going to want to be able to depreciate that purchase just like you would anything. Like if you bought a vehicle for your business, or maybe you expanded your office and you bought new furniture, you know, you get to depreciate that asset over a period of time, and you know, certainly that will help your financials, right, to be able to appreciate those assets. So you're from a tax perspective, it will reduce your tax, right? So you're going to want to be able to depreciate those assets. Goodwill is a depreciable asset, so it does count. And depending on your tax situation, it, you know, oftentimes is a 10-year asset, could be a 15-year asset, sort of depends. But you're able to depreciate those assets as you continue to operate your business. Physical assets can be depreciated a little more quickly. And this is probably a good segue into, you know, why someone might want to do an asset legal transaction versus a stock transaction, or what's, you know, often people use the term sort of they confuse stock transaction term with equity. Those are different things, but, you know, an asset deal essentially says, hey, we're buying the assets of your business, including your goodwill. And we're going to value each of those asset classes discreetly. So if we're going to spend $10 million for the business, we're going to pay $8 million for the goodwill. We're going to spend $1 million on physical assets. And, you know, maybe there's another asset class that you may allocate purchase price to. And, you know, you'll be able to segregate those asset classes based on the IRS's rules around how fast you can depreciate that goodwill. In a stock deal, there's a much larger percentage that has to be allocated. I shouldn't say much larger. There's a larger percentage that has to be allocated to goodwill. And typically the assets, the physical assets, you don't get what's called a step-up depreciation advantage. There's some accounting rules that you can apply to step up or accelerate the depreciation of certain physical assets in an asset deal that you can't in a stock deal. And so now I say that with a little bit of a caution, because there is a way to do that within the IRS code called a Section 338H10, where you get essentially a stock deal with the benefits of an asset deal from a buyer's perspective. It is fairly complex, and there's some rules around what types of transactions qualify, and, you know, what types of legal entities that companies have to be in order to qualify for them. So I would caution you to, you know, certainly talk to your tax advisor if you're contemplating a stock transaction with a Section 338H10 election. But in short, there are some workarounds there. But in general, it's safe to say that, you know, a stock transaction will most likely be a longer amortization of the purchase price. But it's only slightly so, because it would be only appropriate based on what would be applicable to a stepped up depreciation schedule, which typically is physical assets. Now, if physical assets have been already depreciated, then there's no further depreciation really available. So I think you can't depreciate assets twice. You may be able to, you can certainly, the safest way to do it is to allocate the non-depreciable value of those physical assets. There's other ways to look at it too. There's sort of fair market value of those assets, even if they've already been depreciated, that may be applicable. But again, these are, I'll add the caveat that we're not tax advisors, and you should be talking to your tax advisor about the most efficient way to amortize the purchase price. But hopefully that gives us some guidelines and some ditches here, Ryan, to talk about, you know, the different types of business entity and you know, why, frankly, there's not that big a difference between an asset deal and a stock deal as it relates to tax efficiency in our industry.
No, it's a great question. Can you help me understand what would happen if goodwill wasn't in place in IT services? Would it simply the value of the enterprise value of the deal would just be that of the assets or book value, or is that even a fair question?
Yeah, not really, because you know you have to be able to account for. It would be catastrophic on a lot of levels. A business would only be worth its physical assets or book value, which, you know, isn't appropriate in our world. But beyond that, it would also mean that the acquirer, you know, if they spent more than that to acquire the business, because remember, when you get to a purchase price of a business, you have to get to a willing buyer and a willing seller coming together on price. Certainly there's some guidelines around, you know, fair value and multiples of EBITDA and comps and all these things that impact value. But when you think about that, there would just be this big hole of purchase price value that would be paid that wouldn't be depreciable by the buyer. Certainly would take a huge bite out of the tax efficiency of the deal. And as a result, you know, I think a lot fewer deals would get done.
Okay. And then in general, is there anything a seller can do to increase the goodwill of the company? From what I'm hearing, it sounds like having a well-run, profitable business with repeat customers and a strong brand and a knowledgeable employee base, all that, it would be essentially all dedicated to goodwill. Is there anything specific associated with goodwill that the seller should consider or focus on perhaps a year before transaction?
Well, it's a good question. And the way to think about that, I think, is just, you know, it's directly correlated to the overall value of the business, right? So I think, you know, goodwill in its own right has value in that it sort of fills the gap between whatever the other asset classes you have and their book value and the price that's paid for the business. So you would want to make sure that you are running the business efficiently, that you have significant profitability, that you're sort of in the top quartile of kind of your peers, kind of cover off all of the things that we normally talk about what builds value in a business over the long term. And then obviously by doing that, your value of your business is going to be higher than if you don't do that. So it's sort of a direct correlation to, you know, run a great business that is growing and profitable and meets the needs of your customers and clients well, and in that you'll have interest by, you know, suitors. And, you know, you'll always have the option to sell the business and optimize the purchase price and thus sort of optimize the goodwill per se. But those two are directly correlated as it sort of fills the gap between your book value and the price paid for the business is kind of what's made up of the goodwill, or the goodwill makes that up.
Sure. And then if you think about a company who perhaps does several acquisitions and then goes through its own process to sell, is additional goodwill created in every acquisition? Is that something that is goodwill just created or destroyed in a transaction? And how does that have like a longer term impact if you're buying a business and you've got goodwill that's on your balance sheet and you ultimately sell yourself or that business? Is there any implications to having a large amount of this goodwill?
Well, it certainly is a depreciable asset as it relates to tax. So, you know, how you roll that forward in your situation should your business sell, or it really becomes the benefit of the buyer, right? And how they treat the goodwill. And that's a tax question that has a lot to do with the type of entity that's doing the acquisition, you know, and how they apply that goodwill in the next transaction. And, you know, and there may be other things that impact not necessarily goodwill in the situation, but certainly impact value. We were just speaking about one of those earlier today, which is a loss carry forward tax credit that can add value to a business beyond the goodwill that may be have been inherited as part of an M&A transaction that you had done on your behalf of your own business, but still has value because it hasn't been fully realized. And if someone were to acquire you, that also could be realized. And that impacts not only the value of the business, but also, you know, how you might treat any goodwill that you're carrying or amortizing on your balance sheet pursuant to previous M&A transactions. I guess that's why we all hopefully have very good tax counsel, because these quickly become complex as to how you treat them. And if you sprinkle in other things like, you know, Section 338H10 elections on stock deals, and you know, how you do step-up depreciation on physical assets in that situation, assuming it's not all allocated to goodwill. And, I mean, there's a variety of things that can become pretty complex pretty quickly. So, you know, our advice is always that, you know, particularly as it relates to amortization of assets pursuant to M&A and or whether that be on buy side or sell side and tax efficiency, that you have someone who is very experienced in merger and acquisition tax, providing you advice and counsel early on before you would ever do a transaction, either acquire a business or sell your business, because tax efficiency certainly can play a huge role in sort of how you get return on investment if you're a buyer and how you ultimately treat that. And ultimately, you know, your purchase price sort of realization if you're a seller.
Absolutely. And this is where, this is one of those daunting things. If you don't have the right people by your side, it's hard to get a deal done. And having the right experts in A, having an M&A advisor who understands the implications on both sides of the table. B, having your tax accountant there, and C, having the legal agreements that are able to incorporate this. It sometimes may not be as easy as flipping a switch from a, you know, an asset to a stock deal or vice versa. So having some of the flexibility and understanding when you're looking at a deal that, you have the ability to maneuver correctly is critically important to these decisions. So, yeah. Mike, that's about all the questions I have. Any closing thoughts as we talk about this in-depth goodwill discussion?
Yeah, I guess, you know, the advice I give to the audience is that, you know, there's a lot of consternation around whether a deal should be asset or stock deal in our industry. And I think those are not, it's not really necessary. in both transactions, you know, the lion's share of the allocation will be goodwill. There's only very specific and small situations. There's very specific situations in which it would have a different impact to you as a buyer, yeah, from a tax perspective. And oftentimes there's no impact. And so I wouldn't overthink it. Now there's other reasons, where, you know, sometimes depending on the situation and how a particular deal is authored, a stock deal could come with additional liability for a buyer. But generally your legal counsel can take care of neutering that and managing it accordingly based on the documentation associated with the purchase agreement. So I, you know, again, it kind of comes back to, don't get overly concerned on whether it's positioned as an asset deal or a stock deal. There's ways to do a stock deal and then convert it to an asset deal, as well. That are oftentimes used, by buyers, post-transaction, and called an F-reorg. And that can be certainly an approach, as well in the event that there would be a need to do that based on the legal entities that are doing the acquiring, or if there's specific, you know, sort of litigation or legal reasons to shield the assets. But, you know, it probably all comes back to this recommendation, which is, you know, you need three real competent advisors on your side if you're going to go do deals. You need a M&A advisor who knows how to navigate these waters. You need a great legal advisor who's experienced in M&A. And you need a great tax advisor who also knows her way around, you know, M&A and related tax matters.
That makes sense. Again, I appreciate all the insight here, Mike, and I'll turn it back to you to wrap it up.
Sounds great. Thanks, Ryan. With that, we're going to tie a ribbon on it for this week's Shoot the Moon podcast. Please tune in and join us next week when we will continue our broadcast from what finally has become summer here. It seems at least spring and looking a lot more like summer in the Midwest, and talking about more relevant topics around growth strategy and M&A for tech-enabled services companies. So with that, make it a great day and a great week, and we look forward to having you tune in next time. So long.